one-man revolution, a guerrilla scholar warrior, a renaissance man for the new dark age. Welcome to Prof. CJ's Dangerous History Podcast.
Howdy everybody, welcome to what will be episode 37 of the Dangerous History Podcast. I am your intrepid host, Prof. CJ, bringing you the history that the man would probably rather you not know, doing my utmost to be a light in the darkness of the current dark age. In this episode, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to do my very first movie review. It's going to be a Dangerous History movie review. And the movie in question is the recently released film Kill the Messenger, about journalist Gary Webb and the story he broke and some of what happened to him in the aftermath of breaking that story. I was originally going to make episode 37 of the next part in my America Does Mengele series, which I did the last part of episode 36, looking at the radiation experiments done by the U.S. government during the Cold War. And for the second installment of the America Does Mengele series, I was planning on doing some stuff on CIA mind control experiments during the Cold War, and I'm still planning on doing that. I'm still working on that, still reading, researching, getting my ducks in a row. But that'll probably be along later next week, something like that. But I somewhat spontaneously decided to go see Kill the Messenger. Now, this film is kind of a small movie, indie movie, whatever you want to call it. Not a big blockbuster, not super well advertised. In fact, I had not heard about it until just a day or two ago. It was mentioned to me by one of my colleagues at the school where I work. The professor of political science, who has an office pretty much just down the hall from mine, and I chat with him a lot. He's a lefty, and I consider myself not left or right. I have problems with sort of both leftism and rightism. I'm an anarchist who's equally uncomfortable with big government and big corporations, since after all, government and corporations are just sort of two types of the same thing in a way. At least that's how I see it. So this guy, though, he's one of the, you know, there are both rightists and leftists that I respect. Ones that are honest, ones that are not just partisan hacks all the time, ones that actually have principles, ones that, you know, stand for at least some decent things most of the time. So, you know, on the right, you might have your Ron Paul. On your left, you might have your Ralph Nader, somebody like that. You know, I can get along fine with those people. It's the party hacks, you know. It's the Hillary Clintons on the left that I can't quite get along with, and the sort of, you know, Mitt Romneys and Bushes on the right that I can't quite get along with. So anyway, this colleague of mine who teaches political science, and we don't agree on everything, but everybody's a decent guy, we can have good conversations, and he happened to mention to me, he knows my interests, my predilections, and he happened to mention to me that he had recently seen Kill the Messenger, and he said, it's a movie I think that you would like. And I said, really, I haven't even heard of it. And he told me a little bit about it, and of course, as soon as he said it's about Gary Webb, I immediately knew that, because I've been familiar with Gary Webb and his work for many years. I read Dark Alliance, I forget, at least probably 10 years ago now. The book was published in 99. And, you know, I've encountered the sort of stuff he was talking about in many different situations in my historical research. So when he told me it was about Gary Webb and his the stories he broke and what happened to him, I said, oh, this is a movie I have to see. So next chance I got, I'm on the internet looking at, okay, where is this movie playing? And unfortunately, since it's not a blockbuster, even though it does have some pretty big name actors in it, you know, it's still kind of a small film. And I don't want to say there's definitely a conspiracy behind that smallness, but, you know, sometimes you gotta wonder, right? I mean, there's another historical movie out recently that I'm not planning on seeing, Fury, starring Brad Pitt, and I'm sure it's a decent movie and whatnot, but my feeling is, do we really need another World War II movie? Really? I don't know. Might be a fine movie. Maybe I'm missing out not seeing it, but my feeling is another World War II big buck Hollywood movie is probably something I can pass on unless it's really got something new or different or interesting to say. So I'm looking around, and the closest theater that is carrying Kill the Messenger is a little over an hour drive from me, and it was one of those things where, I don't know, I really want to see this movie. Do I want to drive an hour or whatever? Well, I decided to leave work early on Friday. And Friday, I can leave work early, actually. I'm able to have sort of like flex time on Fridays, you might say. Stay a little bit later other days of the week so that Friday I can get off a little bit early. And from work, I was a little bit closer. I had a little bit of a head start towards where the theater is. So I just went ahead and left work on Friday and drove straight to the theater and saw the movie, then headed back. It was well over an hour drive back. So my take on Kill the Messenger. Well, first off, a little bit about the movie itself. It is directed by Michael Cuesta, I think is how you say his name. He's a guy who hasn't done really much movie work that I recognize. He's done some films, but nothing that I'm familiar with. But has done a fair amount of TV work on shows that I recognize, including things like Blue Bloods, Dexter, and some other shows that I'm at least a little bit familiar with. And the movie stars Jeremy Renner as Gary Webb. Now, Jeremy Renner, I always think of him as Hawkeye in The Avengers, just because that's the most recent sort of big major role I've seen him in. But he's an actor, you know, a lot of people know him. He's not quite as big of a name as Matt Damon or Ben Affleck or one of these characters, but he's up there. I believe in The Hurt Locker, he was at least nominated for an Academy Award. He's a good actor. And there were other actors who had small to medium parts in the movie that are fairly well-known actors. Barry Pepper had a spot as a government prosecutor at one point. Oliver Platt played the, I guess, chief editor, something like that, sort of the head guy at Gary Webb's newspaper. Andy Garcia played one of the Nicaraguan criminals in this story, Norwin Meneses. Robert Patrick, he of I'm Looking for John Connor fame, played some drug dealer towards the beginning of the movie in a brief role. Anyway, there were other actors that, you know, are not the huge Hollywood, like, A-list, but they're very good actors, respected, who've been in a lot of things that you'd recognize. Now, the movie is only in limited numbers of theaters across the country. Like I said, I live in a fairly populous area, not a major metro area, but a reasonably populated area. Normally, I don't have to drive too far to get to most things that I would want to go to, but even where I live, I had to drive, you know, 70-some-odd miles or whatever to get to see this movie in the theater. So depending on where you are, if you're lucky, maybe it'll be playing in a theater near you. If you're not lucky, maybe you'll have to drive as far as I did or even farther, and it'll be up to you to make the determination whether you can wait for the movie to come out on Netflix or whether you just have to go see it. The movie has generally received positive reviews, although not like super extremely positive reviews. I think Rotten Tomatoes, it's pulling about a 75 last time I checked, something like that. So, you know, good, but not like absolute, you know, 90%+ territory. Now, Gary Webb, if you're not familiar with this guy and his story, very interesting character. He was an American reporter who, in the 1990s, worked for the San Jose Mercury, which is a kind of mid-sized paper, but it's no LA Times, it's no New York Times, no Washington Post. You know, it's kind of a smallish to mediumish sort of paper. Not a podunk gazette, but, you know, not a major one. And he just happened to have some things kind of almost laying on his lap that started him just sort of pulling the thread, following where things led to, and coming up with stuff that really I don't think he was even expecting to find. So I've heard different interviews with him over the years. Like I said, I've read his book, Dark Alliance, a long time ago. So I was already basically familiar with the story, but I still enjoyed the movie. And I still think it's worth going to see, especially if you're not familiar with Gary Webb's story. But even if you are, it's worth seeing because it's a very well done movie. Anyway, Gary Webb, reporter for the San Jose Mercury, gets a phone call one day, sort of out of the blue. He had been doing some reporting on the drug war. He was kind of critical of the drug war, and particularly how it was eroding civil liberties and due process. And he had been looking into things like asset forfeiture and how unfair that can be. And he gets a call from a woman who says her boyfriend is on trial for drug smuggling, something like that, and asset forfeiture is taking place, and all these sorts of things. And Gary Webb initially is like, well, okay, I mean, that's interesting, but I've already done stories on that sort of thing, so sorry. And then she tells him something like he smuggled drugs for the U.S. government, something like that. And turns out, you know, this piques his interest, he follows up. She actually has her hands on some documents that were accidentally turned over to her boyfriend's attorney during the discovery process that back up her story and give it enough credibility that Gary Webb is able to decide to look into it and get his editors to give him the go-ahead. He looks into it and he starts digging up all this stuff that eventually leads him down to Nicaragua and reveals links between at least certain elements of the CIA that were involved with the Iran-Contra type stuff in the 80s and drug smugglers from Nicaragua who were bringing cocaine from Central America up into the United States. And one of the main hubs they were bringing it into was California, where much of this cocaine in the 80s and early 90s was ending up turned into crack in places like South Central Los Angeles, where, you know, Freeway Ricky Ross was running at the time, one of the biggest drug operations in America. So Gary Webb starts tracking all these things down. He talks to Freeway Ricky Ross. He eventually goes down to Nicaragua and talks to Norwin Meneses, who was, I once heard Gary Webb in an interview describe him as the Al Capone of Nicaragua. Norwin Meneses was in prison when Gary Webb talked to him, but he told him all kinds of things about the CIA ties and how, you know, the CIA, well, the CIA itself was not smuggling the drugs. They were sort of helping and enabling and turning a blind eye and sort of protecting this particular operation from other U.S. agencies like the FBI, the DEA, the L.A. Sheriff's Department, and so on. So after doing a lot of research, Gary Webb eventually writes a series of stories for his newspaper that get huge attention. He wins awards, including at some point he wins a Pulitzer Prize, and is all over on, you know, major TV shows, being interviewed and so on. And then the system starts to strike back. The CIA uses its pull at the real big establishment media outlets to start turning the story into being about Gary Webb and raising all sorts of questions about him and his reporting ability and if all of his facts are true and his sources and so on. And essentially, they ruin his career. They get enough pressure on his newspaper that he is sent down to some little podunk suburb or something like that doing crappy stories. I think in the movie, and I'm guessing this is true, in the movie it says that his last story working for the San Jose Mercury is actually about a police horse that dies of constipation. So that's what happened to his career. He goes very quickly, I think within the space of about a year or so, from like winning all sorts of awards and accolades to essentially being sent to the wilderness, and he ends up resigning from the San Jose Mercury and going off on his own, but he never quite finds success after that. He resigned from the San Jose Mercury, I think, in 1997, and a couple years later publishes Dark Alliance, but it's not a huge success from like a commercial standpoint. It gets mixed reviews, and He kind of struggles from that point on. He does freelance writing for various journalist outlets, but among the sort of major papers and so on, he's seen as an outcast, and he can't get a decent full-time job at a significant newspaper, or even a modest newspaper. So the movie covers the story of Gary Webb from, starts right before he gets this tip from the lady about her boyfriend, and leads you all the way up through his discovery, his writing of the article for the San Jose Mercury, getting this attention and acclaim, and then gets you through to the scene where he resigns from his newspaper, and doesn't really go much past that other than it has sort of like some text at the end. So, plot spoilers, right? I mean, I'm sorry if I spoiled the plot for you. I probably should have said something towards Gary Webb about, I think it said 7 years to the day, actually, after he resigned from the San Jose Mercury, you know, angry at his editors for pulling the plug on him and turning on it. Gary Webb allegedly commits suicide. Now, I say allegedly because it's just fishy enough that it makes you wonder. I mean, on the one hand, he had been having problems. He had had career problems, obviously. He had had a hard time getting traction for his career after leaving the Mercury. He had had, I believe, marital problems. This is not really depicted or mentioned in the movie, but I think he had gotten, you know, as he had gotten more and more, you know, angry over his career and so on, he had gotten divorced from his wife, and he had been having legitimate issues, for sure. And so he commits suicide, allegedly. And the thing that's really fishy about it, though, is he's shot twice in the head. And the movie didn't really get into this. The movie just had a little blurb of text at the end mentioning this. But to their credit, they did at least mention he was shot twice in the head. Now, coroners and other experts in these sorts of things will say that while it is rather rare, it does occasionally happen that a person has to shoot themselves twice in the head to kill themselves. It's one of those things that I don't know what to make of it, honestly. On the one hand, yeah, there are rare cases of a person doing that. On the other hand, the fact of who he was, the fact that, you know, he had so many targets on his head, you know, even if he didn't have them literally, even if he didn't have people coming after him, but the fact that he had pissed off many major parts of the establishment, including the CIA, and then he dies in this weird way, shot twice in the head, ruled a suicide. It's, you know, it's just enough that my personal take is, you know, I can't say for sure. I'm not familiar enough with the case. I don't know if anybody ever could be. But I would say maybe about 60%, I think he was killed by somebody else. Maybe 40% it was a suicide, something like that. Now, he was shot twice in the head with a .38 caliber revolver, with his revolver. And, you know, the more conspiracy-minded types out there immediately, oh yeah, it was obviously a setup. I mean, I'm not willing to say that I'm 100% sure or even 90% sure that it wasn't a suicide. But it's just odd enough to make me suspicious. Now, a .38 caliber revolver is not an overwhelmingly powerful gun, but on the other hand, it is a definite defensive round. I mean, it's something that was the standard police round for American police for most of the 20th century. And the notion that you would shoot yourself. Now, I don't know if Gary Webb shot himself like in the temple or pointing the gun up through his mouth or what, but the notion that you would, presumably if you're shooting yourself, you're putting the muzzle like right up next to or actually on your head, one way or another. And the notion that you would send a .38 special bullet through your head at point-blank range, and it would not damage you enough to prevent you from, assuming it doesn't even kill you instantly, right? But it wouldn't mess you up enough to prevent you from shooting yourself one more time. That's kind of tough. Not only would you have to have the wherewithal to keep the revolver up and aimed at your head, you would then have to fire it again, and double-action revolvers have fairly long, heavy trigger pulls. For those who are not familiar with shooting, you might not understand. If you've never fired a double-action revolver, a modern revolver, where you don't have to cock the hammer for every shot, you just pull the trigger has a long, heavy pull. And the notion that you would blast yourself once through the head with a .38, and still, even if you were still alive, have the wherewithal to keep the gun held in your hand, keep the gun aimed at your head, and squeeze that long, heavy trigger one more time, I don't know. You know, if he had killed himself with a .22, I might be inclined to say, okay, he did shoot himself twice in the head. But a .38 is just powerful enough that it makes it a little bit harder to believe. You know, a little more skeptical that he actually killed himself. Hey, might have. I don't know, but it's fishy. I have to say, though, at the end of it all, it doesn't even really matter that much whether a CIA hitman or something along those lines actually pulled the trigger on the gun that killed Gary Webb, because whether somebody else physically pulled that trigger and shot him twice in the head, or whether he actually did do it himself. You know, if he did it himself, he did it because his life was messed up. He did it because his life was destroyed. He did it because the CIA, using its pull in the media and its allies in the media, put out a character assassination first. And even if Gary Webb did, in fact, fire those shots into his own head, he did it because they destroyed him for exposing the truth. And there's a long history in human society of killing the messenger when he exposes dangerous truths. It goes all the way back to Socrates, if not further. Now, the movie was very well made, very well done, edited, all that stuff. I thought it was quite good. Jeremy Renner, fine actor, did a great job. All the other actors in the movie did a great job. It was really well done. And it's an absolute shame that this movie will not get the attention it deserves. But it won't. It won't. I don't think it will. Not unless it goes like viral grassroots type thing. I don't think that the mainstream really wants people hearing this story and thinking about it. Later documents that came out from the CIA and from other sources actually backed up most of what Gary Webb reported on. And most of the papers that attacked his reporting were relying on anonymous sources who were primarily CIA agents. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. I think the movie's definitely worth seeing. It is not perfect, but it's very well done. It's an above average movie in terms of the acting and the editing, cinematography, all that good stuff. Honestly, the biggest flaw I saw with the movie is I wanted it to be a little more. While it was very good and engrossing, I wanted it to follow things out a little bit further. I wanted it to follow Gary Webb past just the point at which he resigned from the Mercury. I wanted it to follow him to, you know, continuing problems. Again, not covering every detail of his 7 years still alive after resigning from the Mercury, but to at least give you more of a sense of what happened over the next 7 years. His publishing of the book, Dark Alliance, which contained even more research and information than the article series that he published in the Mercury, which was also titled Dark Alliance, that, you know, getting a sense of further attacks on him after that, and maybe more of a sense of what he was like in the years leading up to his death. But all in all, I think the film is definitely worth seeing if you're at all into, you know, the dark side of American history. If you're into dangerous history the way I am, you'll definitely enjoy the movie. You'll appreciate it. I'm going to leave links in the show notes at prophecyj.org for in the Amazon links, Gary Webb's book, Dark Alliance. Another book, which I confess I have not read, called Kill the Messenger. That's another one of the books that inspired the movie, aside from Gary Webb's own book, and obviously that gave the movie its title. I'm going to put a link to that, too, as well, in the show notes. And also the documentary American Drug War, which is a good documentary worth watching that raises a lot of questions about the war on drugs, and does talk about Gary Webb's investigations and the revelations of CIA complicity in pumping cocaine into black neighborhoods in South Central LA in order to fund the Contras and all that stuff. They even they talked to Freeway Ricky Ross on there. And also a link, an Amazon link to another good documentary on the war on drugs. I do not believe, if I remember right, does not directly mention Gary Webb's work, but also exposes a lot of things related to the war on drugs, called The House I Live In. So those will be in the Amazon links there. If you want to support the show, buy stuff from Amazon going through those links, and prophecyj.org will get a little bit of a kickback from that, and it'll help the show. I'm also going to see if I can find an interview or two, good ones with Gary Webb that I can link to, so you can watch him in his own words. You know, Jeremy Renner, great actor, but I don't think he quite looks and sounds exactly like Gary Webb did in all actuality. But anyway, good movie, Kill the Messenger. I do highly recommend it. It is absolutely a rare thing in Hollywood that they make a movie that's actually a dangerous history movie. It's actually a movie that exposes things about the powerful people and what they really do that, you know, they'd rather not have you really be thinking about. And I suppose it's only appropriate that it's a relatively minor movie in the grand scheme of things, kind of an indie movie, kind of hard to find. I guess that's how dangerous history always is. But, you know, do we really need another movie that's all rah, rah, rah for the man in the system? I don't think so. So, anyway, that's sort of my take on Kill the Messenger. And, you know, I think it's worth seeing, even if you have to drive a little bit. If you have to drive real far, well, you might want to make the cost benefit, wait for it to come out on Netflix. But I think the folks who made this movie deserve to be congratulated for making something that actually raises some important questions and doesn't just, you know, offer more praise and support to the powers that be. So remember, by all means, feel free to leave comments in the show notes for this show. Any questions, comments for me about the show. You can also email me, prophecyj@prophecyj.org. And you can follow the show on Twitter and Facebook. Get updates when episodes are released, all that kind of good stuff, and random things from me. Remember to support the show. You can just spread the word. That's a great way to help support the show. Also, you can help financially, prophecyj.org/donate. And you can help financially as well by buying things from Amazon.com by going through the links that I have for most of the episodes of the Dangerous History podcast. So thank you for listening. I hope that my first movie review hasn't been too clunky. Movie reviews aren't, you know, my main thing that I do, so you know, might not be as slick as somebody who does movie reviews all the time, but I thought it was one of those things that has enough relevance to the type of stuff that I like to cover and look into on this show that, A, I should go out of my way to go see it, and B, I should make some sort of a little post about what I thought of it, and ultimately, because I liked it, why I think it's worth seeing. So, this has been Prof. CJ, helping you, hopefully, to learn a little about the past so you can understand the present and prepare for the future.
Thanks for listening to the Dangerous History Podcast. Check us out at profcj.org. That's profcj.org.